ओम जिनकी मैनम दस्या जना जना सलाकाया चक्षुष मैंने थम जिने तस्मै श्री गुरु नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्टम स्थापितम जिने बुद्धले सायं प्रतिदा मायं दत्ति सहपन्नति कम अंश कपटुगस चक्षुष निवे विचार पतितनम पम्ने विपश्चिमेगा continuing Brahmananda Bharati's conversation with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The last thing was that when Brahmananda Bharati said that he was actually Krishna, Mahaprabhu said, this is because of your deep ecstatic love for Krishna, you see Krishna wherever your eyes turn. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, after saying this, after they reconciled everything in their blissful way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Brahmananda Bharati with him to his residence. From that time on, Brahmananda Bharati remained with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later, Rambhadra Acharya and Bhagavan Acharya also joined them. And giving up all other responsibilities, they remained under Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shelter. The next day, Kashishwara Gosai also came and remained with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who received him with great respect. So, does anyone remember anything when Kashishwara Goswami's name was mentioned before? Do you remember who he was? He was that Sripada Ishwara Puri had instructed two great souls to serve Mahaprabhu. One was Govinda, and one was Kashishwara. And Govinda came immediately, and he did that, and then he said Kashishwara wanted to go to holy places of pilgrimage before coming. So one might start thinking, why did he do that? Mahaprabhu's feet are the most holy places of pilgrimage. So we think he was missing out. But then it describes that he came the next day. So what was Kashishwara's service? Govinda would serve the personal body. He was the personal servant of Mahaprabhu. But Kashishwara, he used to usher Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into the Jagannath temple. He would precede the Lord. He would go before the Lord into the crowd, and he would keep people from touching him, because everyone is always pushing and touching, holding on to you. Pushing with your one part of your arm, yes? Little bit pushing so they can go forward and things like that. So he protected Mahaprabhu from any kind of disturbance. As all the rivers flow into the sea, all the devotees throughout the country finally came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shelter. Okay, what did that verse say?
Rivers entering into the ocean. All the devotees came to the lotus feet of Chaitanya.
Yeah, so Mahaprabhu was the ocean, and the rivers were compared to the devotees. So now we're very close to the end of the chapter. Since all the devotees came to him for shelter, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed them all mercy and kept them under his protection. Now what do you gather from that? There's a saying that it is cause and effect. Because something occurs, then an effect occurs. So what was the thing that occurred that caused the effect? The effect was that Mahaprabhu gave him his protection. Sabai, all of them, Rakila Nijastani. He kept them under Nijastani, in his place, under his protection, under his care. So what did they do that caused them to keep them, give them more protection? Does anyone remember? I read it again. Since all the devotees came to him for shelter, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed them all mercy and kept them under his protection. So why did he keep them under his protection? Because they came to him for shelter. Thus, Kaviraj Goswami says, I have described the meeting of all the Vaishnavas with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And whoever hears this description ultimately attains the shelter of Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Charan, praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy. Hare Krishna, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Sri Rupa Raghunatha Pade, Yadash, Yasha, Chaitanya Charitamrita Kahi, Krishna. Now the next chapter. Chapter 11 is the Beta Krishna pastime. Beta means going around. Beta Kirtan pastime. So it means when the devotees, they went around the outside of the Jagannath temple in Kirtan. This is what Beta Kirtan means. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu merged the entire world. This is the first verse, because usually Kaviraj Goswami, the first verse of a chapter indicates the content of the entire chapter. So this is what this chapter is going to be about. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu merged the entire world into the ocean of ecstatic love by performing his different dances within the temple of Jagannath. He danced exquisitely and jumped high. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinoda. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Sri Advaita Prabhu. And all glories to the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The next day, so the next day means after Ardin, one more day later, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya requested Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give him permission to submit a statement without fear. So this is this particular pastime is broken up over many chapters, and it's partially written about in many chapters, and that's the desire of Maharaj Prataparudra to gain some association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has been given the request by the king, and this was previously spoken of, that please ask Mahaprabhu to allow me to see him, to have his darshan. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was fearful enough to ask his permission, Mahaprabhu's permission, before saying, would you allow me to ask something of you, and say it without any fear. And Mahaprabhu gave Bhattacharya assurance that he could speak without fear, but he added that if his statement was suitable, he would accept it, and if it was not, he would reject it. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, there's a king named Prataparudra Rai. He is very anxious to meet you and wants your permission. Utkanta hanache toba milibare chai. He's very eager. What does kanta mean? Neck. And ut?
Yeah,
so like this. That's where the word comes from. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this proposal, okay, what do you think he's going to say? Do you think he's going to say, oh, he wants to meet me? Of course he can meet me, because he just gave all the devotees the last statement we heard from the last chapter, because all the devotees came to seek his protection, his shelter, and he gave them some place. So naturally, one would think that because the king was eager to see him, naturally Mahaprabhu, who was an ocean of mercy, would allow him to do so. But he wanted his permission. And as soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this proposal, he immediately covered his ears with his hand and said, my dear Sarvabhauma, why are you requesting such an undesirable thing from me? So he had already gained the assurance that he could speak whatever he said without fear. But look at Mahaprabhu's reaction. Since I'm in the renounced order, it is as dangerous for me to meet a king as to meet a woman. They are both like drinking poison. And then a very famous verse is quoted from Prabodhananda Saraswati. And then, Kinchananasya Bhagavad Bhajon Mukhasya Paramparam Jigmiswa Bhavasagarasya Sandarshanam Vishayinam Ata Yoshitam Cha Hahanta Hanta Visha Bhakshanato Api Asadu. Greatly lamenting, the Lord then informed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and this verse is, from Chaitanya Chandradvaya Natha. Greatly lamenting, the Lord then informed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, alas, for a person who is seriously desiring to cross the material ocean and engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without material motives, seeing a materialist engaged in sense gratification and seeing a woman who is similarly interested is more abominable than drinking poison willingly. So why is seeing a king so dangerous? I mean, if you think about it, you think about the two things. It is to not see any women who are interested in sense gratification. Now, where you're going to go in Kali Yuga, where you won't see that. Prabhupada, one time, one devotee, I think it was actually Gaugamuni, who asked Prabhupada something about he was being disturbed by all the women around. He said, "Where you, the only place you can go up to the Himalayas somewhere, but who can do that? So you have to deal with it." Something, I'm paraphrasing it, but you have to figure out how to deal with it. You have to become purified. That's what he answered. But why is a king so undesirable for one who is renounced to see?
Several reasons. One is association. It also could damage the reputation of sannyasi.
Of a king.
Maybe somebody's hanging out with king and worldly minded people.
Okay, what specifically about a king? Because it doesn't mention like a businessman.
He's attached to power and wealth and money and women generally.
He has power to enjoy.
Yeah. What else? Yeah.
He represents material opulence.
Yeah. And not only that, he's very attractive because of that. Mm. And they're powerful. He has in Bhagavad Gita as the quality of a kshatriya, Ishwara Bhavam. How does Prabhupada translate that? How does he translate that in the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah? This is what mobile phones are for, isn't it? 18. What is it, 1842 or something? 40. Ishwara Bhav. It means the mood of Ishwara. So how does he translate it? Heroism.
Love of control and love of power.
But it's a particular mood. It's a it's like a charismatic mood.
I'm in
joy. Yeah. So what is the problem about... And they're attractive. They have charisma. So if one is a sannyasi, or one in the renounced order, or even serious about desiring to cross the material ocean, engaging the transcendental love of the loving service of the Lord without material motive.
Of leadership.
Leadership.
Ishwara Bhav, Bhav means anicca.
Yeah. Well, the mood of Ishwara, I am the controller, so you have to be a leader, you means you have to control. You can't be a leader and not control, like you can't be a king without a kingdom. Mm-hmm. So, what's the danger for a person who wants to renounce material desires to associate with a person, a king? Well, what is the danger?
Material desires will affect you.
Yeah, you want.
Some of that spirit may revel.
It will tend to. And you see, he has this, like Prabhupada said, to sannyas ceremony of two of his disciples, young disciples. He said, when you go to a householder's house, you should not think, when you're thinking, I could have had a house like this, I could have done this, I could have done that. And then he said, always keep your beads with you, your mala. So if associating with these powerful people, wealthy people, have you ever gone to the house of a really extremely wealthy person? Mm-hmm. Yes? No? You have to preach in Bombay to do that. Did you? Preaching in Bombay? No.
I am.
Huh?
I am in a very important house.
Good answer. But he's hiding some of his wealth. Did you ever visit him?
Oh, many times.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different level. When you're really with a wealthy person, it's like a different level of living. Did you ever go preaching in some?
Some of the ones in, especially in Chennai, we went in the Gurukul.
Yes. It's like a completely different level. Like we think, if we have a little opulence, we think, we'll have a carpet in our house or the heater on occasionally, when it's cold. But we think on a small level. But like there was one, this one, I can't remember his name right now, Mr. Mota or something like that. No, it was Panilal Patel, I'm not sure if that was the son's name or the father's name, who was very devoted to Prabhupada. Like, had so many Rolls Royces. The Gurukul kids used to go, did you know that was from Vrindavan? He had so many Rolls Royces, and he used to take the kids you know, when the kids would come from Bombay, they would see all the Rolls Royces. They would, that was their excitement. Mm. And pools in their houses and this and that. We went to the occasion to go to the Hinduja's house in Bombay one time with Giri Raj Maharaj. Just like a completely different level. Mm. So when you go and confronted with such opulence, I remember we went in Hong Kong, we used to go to the houses of one wealthy Indian family, Hari Leelas, and they had one of the brothers, they had on his table, he had some kind of a mechanism that was connected to the kitchen below, and like you tell the cook your order, and suddenly it's like this thing would come up on the kitchen table, and open it up, and there it is, whatever you want to eat. And like you never see like a washing machine or something like that, because there's just like the whole house had like chutes, and you just put your clothes in the chute and then you're mad. So it affects the mind, this is the point. And how will it affect the mind? Oh, I could enjoy in this way. I could get some pleasure in this way. And it contaminates the mind with material desires. So therefore it is very dangerous. So what to do for devotees? They have to deal with these people. You have to naturally, the men have to deal with women, women have to deal with men. And I mean, if we have the opportunity to meet a king, we'll immediately take it up and tell them about our projects and our desires for service. So how to deal with that? So the first principle is we should know that it is dangerous. What does Mahaprabhu compare it to? Drinking poison. And what happens when you drink poison? Tamogya, you're finished, dead. So first principle is be careful. And the second, one has to control one's mind. And second, you could even say the first principle is that you should go there as a servant. And you're a servant of someone who has, practically speaking, stolen from your master. You want to... Mm. Like there was this one very, very wealthy man who in Dallas, who was an oil magnate. His name was H.L. Hunt. He was a very, 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 very wealthy. So the devotees were walking by the lake that Prabhupada was taking his morning walk by the lake called White Rock Lake. And in one part of the lake, this wealthy, wealthy man, oil person, had his big, big house. So one of the devotees on the morning walk said to Prabhupada that we wanted to go and see him and tell him about our project, Gurukula, or something, but the guards wouldn't let us in. So Prabhupada said, what would you have said if you went to see him? And they said something like, you know, we have a guru school and everything, something like that. But said, no. She tell him, you have made your wealth in oil and you're a thief because it's all from Krishna's oil. And you're going to go to hell because because you're stealing. And then he said, you have to know how to talk to these kind of people. Said something like that. So here's Srila Prabhupada's purport from that verse. This is a quotation from Sri Chaitanya Chandradaya Natak. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enunciates the principles for a sannyasi renouncing the material world for spiritual advancement. Spiritual advancement is not meant for magic shows and jugglery, but for crossing the material world and being transferred to the spiritual world. Param, param, jigmaso means desiring to go to the other side of the material world. So this is the essence of spiritual advancement. And it is not an easy thing. To have this desire, and this desire only, I want to cross the ocean of material existence and go to the material, to the spiritual world. And why isn't it an easy thing? It's because we're situated in the material world, surrounded by all the material objects that attract our mind. It's like putting a rabbit in a field of carrots. And lettuce also, rabbits also like lettuce. I mean, this is, for him, that's heaven. So in the material world, not that we see so many things that are just our particular weaknesses for enjoyment, subtle, gross. And unless one is, let's say, 100% sincere, then the mind will become allured by these elements of the material world. Allured means attracted into thinking, oh, if I had one of those, then, if then, my life would be, this problem wouldn't be there and that problem were there. So it is quite difficult to be that sincere, to actually not want anything of the material world, but only want to cross the ocean of material existence. One has to be completely sincere. And not only does one have to be completely sincere for a short period of time, but over a very, very long period of time. That's what complete sincerity means. That one is convinced that there's no benefit in touching the things of the material world. The only shub and ashub, that which is auspicious and that which is inauspicious, they are all inauspicious in the material world. So it is a very, very exalted position to be what Prabhupada is saying here. So param param jigmisu means desiring to go to the other side of the material world. Rather, we have a tendency to long for liberation. Mm. Just let me get a peaceful situation somewhere, do a little service, get a little peace. Or, and that's a high level, or attain some material opulence, especially since in devotional service so much material opulence passes before you, through your hands. So much money, so much people say so many nice things about you. Especially when you're dealing in the realm of India and Indians, because they appreciate someone who is renounced and given up everything for a higher purpose. So much money, so much respect, fame will pass through your hands. But Mahaprabhu said, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam va, jagadish, kamani, mama janmani, janmani shvire. I don't even want liberation. Vantad bhakti, vahaituki, causes. I don't want anything other than to serve you for no other reason other than to serve you. How much love has to be in the consciousness, how much one really, I'm not talking about theoretically, but how one has to be attracted to Krishna to actually do more than just recite the verse Sanskrit and English translation. And so why should we want to cross it? So the highest reason is to be with one's beloved, to be with Krishna, and one has unfailing attraction for Krishna. But Prabhupada will first speak on another level. There is a river called Vaitarani, and on one side of this river is the material world, and on the other side is the spiritual world. Since the Vaitarani River is compared to a great ocean, it is named Bhava Sagara, the ocean of repeated birth and death. So equating the material world with repeated birth and death, Bhava Sagara. The material world means repeated birth and death. And no one, although we don't remember birth generally, but everyone is quite fearful of death. Fearful because of the pain involved in dying. I mean, when you're working in the hospital, so Do you ever work in those kind of wards where people are nearing the end? So what is their mood? First of all, I assume that a lot of them, they're medicated.
Yeah, mostly very much with that. The special syringe, it's pretty much just to...
Self-medicating?
Pain, relieves pain, but it's like the last moment. Like you could say, count maybe an hour left over just to breathing.
Do they express fear? Do they look peaceful?
Some look a bit peaceful.
Yeah.
But some just, you know, empty room, couple of families, sometimes you know, no families.
Hmm. I guess what I was asking about specifically was fear, because unless you're very medicated, it's a very fearful time because you don't know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done so many things in your life. And I remember even before when I was a young boy, I remember that somehow or another it was common knowledge that when it's time to die, your life passes in front of you. Is that common? In India, do you think like that? Did you ever hear that? Did you ever hear that? And Mauritius, of course, no one. Such a good climate. No one worries about anything. Did you grow up thinking that too?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Did you?
Is it saying his life flashed before his eyes? It's in the language. His life flashed before his eyes.
Mm. Did you think like that?
I didn't think like that.
But yeah, it's true. It just naturally, your life comes before you, and what you're attached to, and all the miseries, all the good you've done and the bad you've done, and it just passes before your eyes and your mind, and what you're attached to, you'll think of. And then, boom, Adeshta Manastayam Vishopa Sevate, another birth. It is named Bhavasagara, the ocean of repeated birth and death. Spiritual life aims at stopping this repetition of birth and death and entering into the spiritual world where one can live eternally cognizant and blissful, awake, conscious, and full of bliss. Unfortunately, the general population does not know anything about spiritual life or the spiritual world. The spiritual world is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Parastasmad tu bhavo anyo, avyakta vyakta sanatana, yasa saveshu bhuteshu, nasyatsu na vinashyati. Yet there is another nature, which is eternal and transcendental, to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It's a different realm. There's a different realm that's different from this world, which is all we know, where everything is changing. It's manifest, it's unmanifest, it's all changing, shifting continuously. But there's another realm, and that realm is supreme and never annihilated, Krishna says. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. So people aren't aware of that, and therefore their whole existence is focused on the material world. Of course, this is generally. And even religionists, they think that the spiritual world or heaven is something like the material world, but gas is cheap, petrol is cheap or something.
It's a why with a Disney thing, by.
Huh?
It's a why with a Disney thing.
Yeah, something like that. But when you go door to door, you meet pious people sometimes too. I mean, of many faiths and things like that. Mm. Do they have a concept of the spiritual world?
I don't often ask them.
No, but they don't. No matter what religion or spiritualists, they don't have a concept of what the spiritual world is. They think of heaven and some. Yeah, if you read some of the descriptions of heaven, it's quite peculiar. But most people, practically speaking, are impersonalists. Practically speaking, impersonalists and voidists. And this voidism, sunyata, has infected the society so deeply that everyone thinks that when you remove illusion, you're free from suffering and you just cease to exist, like going to sleep forever. And that's what they tell the children. That's what death is. You go to sleep forever. You know, so it's, people don't know where the spiritual world is. Did you want to say something?
Rest in peace.
Rest in
peace.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah. I think it's a long peaceful rest.
Yeah.
It's all from the headstones. Like rest in peace.
Yeah, sort of bizarre, isn't it? When you just go to sleep and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And you stay asleep. It's not a very thoughtful conception. Thus, there is a spiritual nature beyond this material world, and that spiritual nature exists eternally. Spiritual advancement means stopping material activities and entering into spiritual activities. This is the process of bhakti yoga. And when one is fully advanced, that means that one's conscious nature is changed to make it suitable to live in the spiritual world. Now our nature is suitable for living in the material world because it's based on false ego and selfishness and selfish enjoyment, basically. But in the spiritual world, it's a different consciousness. It's all based on Krishna. It's actually Krishna's internal energy, that consciousness. Or our consciousness, our tiny infinitesimal consciousness, is subsumed. Do you know that word? Subsumed, taken over. Or included within, taken over by the internal energy, Krishna's Ladini Sambhit Shakti. And then that is Krishna's pleasure potency. So when our consciousness takes shelter of Krishna's pleasure potency rather than the Maya Shakti of Krishna, and then our consciousness becomes suitable to be in the spiritual world. Until our consciousness is suitable to be in the spiritual world, we can't be in the spiritual world. It's like until our existence is water-like, we cannot live under the water. Krishna consciousness is a matter of changing the quality of the consciousness so it is suitable to live in Goloka Vrindavan. And our attempt can go to a certain point, and then there needs to be a particular type of mercy that causes Ladini Shakti to descend into our consciousness, which is Bhava Bhakti. So spiritual advancement means stopping material activities and entering into spiritual activities. That is the process of Bhakti Yoga. So that is in the change, the transformation that has to occur, and the final result is fully spiritual consciousness, which means consciousness, as Mahaprabhu was demonstrating, that it's simply full of love for Krishna, loving service for Krishna. In the material world, the via media for sense gratification is mainly a woman for man and man for woman. One who is seriously interested in spiritual life should strictly avoid women, especially in the mood of sense enjoyment. A sannyasi should never see a man or a woman for material benefit. In addition, talks with materialistic men and women are also dangerous, and they are compared to drinking poison. So look at the situation for the preacher devotees, or for anyone, but especially the preachers say want to be renounced and detached from materialistic people, but they have to go out and meet materialistic people. And the people who work in the world, the devotees who work in the world, are continuously associating with materialistic people. So how to deal with this problematic situation? Certainly, if one wants to survive, keep one's head above the water in the materialistic ocean, survive, what to speak of, flourish, one needs very strong sadhana to do it, a strong morning program, etc. Otherwise, the material energy, daivyesha gunamayi, mamamaya daratya, is very, very difficult to overcome. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very strict on this point, so he's making this point. He therefore refused to see King Prataparudra, who was naturally always engaged in political and economic affairs. The Lord even refused to see the king, despite the request of a personality like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was the Lord's intimate friend and a devotee. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, "My dear Lord, what you have said is correct. This king is not an ordinary king. He's a great devotee and servant of Lord Jagannath." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Although it is correct that the king is a great devotee, he is still to be considered a venomous snake. Similarly, even though a woman may be made of wood, one becomes agitated simply by touching the form." Sri Chanakya Pandit, in his moral instructions, has stated, "Chaja durjana sam sargam bhaja sadhu samagaman." This means that one has to abandon the association of materialistic people and associate with spiritually advanced people. It seems like Prabhupada's not averse to being what they call, I don't know if they use the same expression here, he's not PC. Do they use that expression here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's not considering what is the correct thing in the current times to say or not say. He tends to be direct and somewhat blunt about the spiritual path. However qualified, this means that one has to abandon the association of materialistic people and associate with spiritually advanced people. However qualified a materialist may be, he is no better than a venomous serpent. Everyone knows that a snake is dangerous and poisonous, and when its hood is decorated with jewels, it is no less poisonous or dangerous. Whoever qualified a materialist may be, he is no better than a snake decorated with jewels. One should therefore be careful in dealing with such materialists, just as one would be careful in dealing with a bejeweled serpent. Even though a woman may be made of wood or stone, she becomes attractive when decorated. One becomes sexually agitated even by touching the form. Therefore, one should not trust his mind, which is so fickle that it can give way to enemies at any moment. The mind is always accompanied by six enemies, namely kam, krodh, mada, moha, matsalya, and bhaya, that is lust, anger, intoxication, illusion, envy, and fear. Though the mind may be merged in spiritual consciousness, one should always be careful in dealing with it, just as one is careful in dealing with a snake. One should never think that his mind is trained and that he can do whatever he likes. One interested in spiritual life should always engage his mind in the service of the Lord, so that the enemies of the mind, who always accompany the mind, will be subdued. If the mind is not engaged in Krishna consciousness at every moment, there is a chance it will give way to its enemies. In this way, we become victims of the mind. Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra engages the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna constantly. Thus, the mind's enemies do not have a chance to strike. Following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example in these verses, we should be very careful in dealing with the mind. We should not be indulged in any circumstance. Once we indulge the mind, it can create havoc in this life, even though we may be spiritually advanced. The mind is specifically agitated through the association of materialistic men and women. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his personal behavior, warns everyone to avoid meeting a materialistic person or a woman. So, we're talking about materialistic people, but that means that there would be no Krishna consciousness movement. So what does Prabhupada mean? And everyone would live in little bhajan kutirs out in the Nalambara desert. Nalambara?
Nalambara.
Nalambara. Everyone, that's where everyone would live. And then, or rather, that's where everyone would die very quickly. No one could do it. So what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually recommended, and Srila Prabhupada followed him, is live in the association of devotees. Keep good association, have strict sadhana, and when dealing with the material energy for preaching, etc., and or to meet one's needs, don't be in the mood of enjoyment. Think of how to please Krishna by it. By these activities, because as soon as the enjoying spirit enters the consciousness, the mind can overwhelm it very easily, become overwhelmed very easily. Anyone want to comment on this?
There was a finance writer by the name of Napoleon Hill.
Yeah.
And interviewed 500. He wanted to find out what made people wealthy, so he interviewed 500 people who were wealthy men at the time. I think he was in the 30s or 40s, so going back a fair while. But what struck him at the end of his research was not that there was a common formula for how these men made the worst, but rather that none were happy and were frustrated. So what really struck out for him was that not that there was some common formula for making money, but that they were all unhappy. He said barely any of them were happy. So that can be one protection.
That conviction.
And having that knowledge that although they may have a lot of wealth, there's bound to be things in their life.
Asun, come in.
There's bound to be things in their life that cause them a lot of frustration or disappointment. One example is that you see all these truck drivers with Lynn Fox on their
what shirts. Do they have on their shirts?
Lynn Fox, the trucking magnate. You often see these people with Lynn Fox, they're truck drivers, they work for Lynn Fox, Lindsay Fox, his trucking magnate. But one of his sons committed suicide, so whenever they have a Christmas party for him together, he feels miserable because one of his sons committed suicide. Well, he's very wealthy.
So you're saying that we should be made aware of the miseries of material existence?
Yeah, just because you have wealth, that doesn't mean that you escape the miseries of material existence. And sometimes they've been more frustrated and disappointed than the average person because they they think with all that wealth they should be able to counteract their miseries, but in reality they sometimes people think, I'll be able to counteract my miseries and get more money, and that sort of keeps them going. But when you've got the money and you still can't counteract your miseries, then what do I do? What do I hope for?
So how does it work? Because when we meet people, often we see good qualities in them, and it's hard not to appreciate those good qualities.
Yeah. So yeah, it's somewhat a different point, but it's really also a very important point.
Because in terms of what we're hearing about, you know, it's like it's dealing with a serpent. I find it hard to take that attitude.
Yeah. So there's two ways to look at it. One is that there's a principle that's being spoken here, and how to apply that principle in a practical way is another point. But what's the point about seeing the good qualities, as like jewels on a serpent? What's the point of that? That we have to see the serpent part, otherwise we can easily become attracted. Okay, but why is it said yasyasta bhaktir bhagavata kinchana? Why is it said that non-devotees cannot really have good qualities?
Because on the platform of the mind, and the mind is...
That's what it says, mana rite nasato bhavato dehi. But what does it mean?
Because the mind is attracted by the glaring effulgence of the material world.
Okay, so what are the good qualities that people have? What are their good qualities then?
Some sattvic qualities.
Yeah, okay, so are they there or are they not there?
To be very polite, very pleasant to do this.
And then you start dealing with devotees who are not polite and not pleasant. And then you start, wait a second, something's not quite working here.
You're scratching your head.
Well, let's just finish this one.
They're not in touch with their true self because they're in touch with the mind. And so the qualities are part of the dress.
Yeah. Well, so manasato, what this means, there's something that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that helped me understand this point. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed him towards Gaurakrishna Das Babaji Maharaj to be his spiritual master. And after he wrote down, after examining the qualities of Gaurakrishna Das Babaji, he understood that no one in this material world can actually possess good qualities, perfect qualities. Because what was the speciality of Gaurakrishna Das Babaji? All right, differentiating him from the material. He was complete. He didn't want anything from the material world at all. So as soon as you want something from the material world, you have a price that you're going to sell out your good qualities to.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. So it's not really your qualities. It's on a certain level of who you are, but if it comes to. You taking the loss or the person you're dealing business.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless someone is very...
The ethics are set up.
Huh?
The ethics are always set up in your favor.
The ethics are set up?
All the ethical principles favor you.
I don't know what you mean.
I mean, if it comes to the business...
There's no ethical principles. There's no ethical principles when it comes to it. The bottom line, as they say, is the ethical principle.
They can say they're doing ethical business with these particular...
Like you were speaking to that lady from Nova, and she had to make the point, you know, we're running a business so we have to get some money from you. So, you know, so there's the altruistic part, you know, we want to let everyone float in the fluff and candy, cotton candy of New Age, but ultimately we have to make money. So there's a bottom line in all the dealings. So the good qualities, when it comes down to it, they're only on a certain level, unless one is very, 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 very deeply committed to spiritual life. And even in family, you know, the word that when you're dealing with family, it says in Prabhupada said that you people are most important, they're attached to themselves first. And because the family members are extensions of their family, extensions of themselves, therefore the affection is placed in them. So the primal affection in material existence is one's own self. And therefore, which means selfishness, unless one is conscious of the self of the self, which is Krishna. So ultimately, people disappoint. But yet you have to be so... this is making a point, not that we...
Yeah.
And a point that we should be careful not to become enamored to. Then if you find out, that the people are so nice and kind to everyone, but they're eating meat.
Mm-hmm.
That's 90% of everyone here. So they're kind, or someone's very, very kind and religious, but if you're a member of a different religious group, they might slit your throat or something like that. Or if you're a member of a different category of being like a goat or a sheep or a cow, they'll kill you. So where is the good qualities if you're ready to kill these poor animals? Set up with your greater intelligence, setting up a systematic conspiracy to kill them.
So would you say that the same... a principle would apply to aspiring devotees in terms of depending on how much they're actually genuinely surrendered to Krishna and how much they're on the platform of the mind?
That those qualities, good qualities, will develop or not develop, you say?
Yeah, and that...
Sure.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between devotees, even if they're very neophyte, and non-devotees, even if they're very advanced spiritually, materially, and even in spirit, materially advanced means mode of goodness, because within their hearts there'll be a deep aversion to Krishna, one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Krishna's sort of written their name down in the book, mm-hmm. and they may have to go through their trials and tribulations, and it may take their time, but they're going to get there. And where is the material this person going to get ultimately? He's going to get in the ocean,
mm-hmm.
get it to surf the ocean of birth and death.
It's like two people are in hospital and they're both sick, but one's taking medicine and one isn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other example that Prabhupada gave was that there's two poor beggars living in the street, penniless, but one is actually the son of a rich man.
Mm-hmm.
So the rich man is, and the other is actually fully a desperate fellow. So they both externally are looking the same, but the very wealthy man has his eye on his son, despite his despicable condition. So Krishna keeps his eye on his devotees. Well, devotee, yeah. Did you want to say something?
I was thinking as you were saying that, what about the comparison to beggars is one thing, but what about the comparison of a beggar who's living horribly and somebody who appears to be living very nicely, doing good deeds and has a nice, kind of comfortable, good situation?
So one of them is a devotee. But yeah, and who's a devotee who's fallen from the position?
Well, who hasn't got up yet? That hasn't made that much advancement out of.
Yeah. So if he's the king's son, who's in a better position?
Well, but they're both the king's son. One doesn't know it at all, and one goes in and out of memory.
Right, but. When one doesn't know it at all and hasn't made any step, then in this example, he's just dealing with the modes of material nature, samaham sarvabhuteshu. But the other person is dealing with Krishna, or Krishna's dealing with him. Even though he may be not dealing with Krishna all the time, Krishna is always dealing with him. This is what he says. Tava smriti yachate sakrideva bhavanas tvam. Tava smriti. If a person is one time sincerely said, I am yours. Abhayam savada tasmai. At all places. He's in a different situation. He's in a fearless situation, actually. But this is not, as far as my understanding, this is not a sectarianness either. We're not saying that, or I'm not saying that. It's only for the members of the Hare Krishna movement, specifically ISKCON or something like that. It's a matter of sincerely, if someone has turned to Krishna, to God, in whatever form he's going to, he's in a different situation than others.
Sometimes thinking, I guess as a neophyte, thinking like this, that people are like snakes, whether jewels or not, makes me not like them very much. Don't like snakes, and not really, and a little bit, don't want to deal with them. Yet, in the Madhyam platform, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that Madhyam's characteristics are such, they're different than the neophyte's characteristics. They don't show compassion to innocent people.
They should. Madhyam.
And they're not up to the Madhyam level. I guess it's just that transiting from the neophyteness that causes those negative reactions to quote-unquote snake-like people who you have a hard heart towards.
Yeah, or how bad?
Rather than having a soft heart.
Yeah, well, same thing with dealing with devotees, you know, who haven't developed gentility or whatever, especially there's the devotees from all over the world, different cultures, different, you know, different expectations, different moods, different considerations. So it's all very, very difficult unless one is very tolerant and very compassionate and sees the difference between the soul and conditioning or very advanced.
So everything's difficult when you're in the beginning stage, more or less, and everything becomes...
But in the material world, it's by nature difficult. So, but what's in Kali Yuga especially, everything is difficult. So there is a special dispensation, a shelter in Kali Yuga of holy names. So if we take shelter of the holy names and Panchanga Bhakti, then that which is easy, difficult becomes easy. That's the admonition of the devatas, you know, that the ocean of material existence shrinks to vatsapadam, the footprint size of the footprint of a calf. By following the getting on the boat left by the acharyas who have crossed over. So that's these processes. But taking shelter of them, I mean, what causes one to take shelter of something? Well, when you know that you're in a dangerous, otherwise no one will take shelter.
Protection.
Huh?
Protection.
Well, yeah, you're in danger, so you take shelter. I mean, if someone goes, I surrender.
Yeah.
Because you're out of fear. So, just in another purport I was reading, that Prabhupada says, because association is so important, this is why it's created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to give association to people. So the whole thing works by association. The positive and the negative works by association. That's one thing that when you go to Melbourne Temple, you really see there's such a strong community, a congregation of devotees. There, the community is so strong and the association that they have with each other is so strong that, you know, it's you know, the temple is a center. It's an actual center of people's lives. It's not the place that they visit. It's just, you know, now and then. But it's actually the center for them. Where they, and the kids are there. Of course, they're riding around on bicycles and looking like junior bikies and things like that, and making all the noise, but everyone is there. Everyone's there. They're growing up in the center where Krishna is the center. So that's something that's very admirable. And it's not easy for it to happen, because that means all your friends, everything's connected to the deity.
In the Prabhupada once, and got in contact with one of the master sitar player, Ravi Shankar, legend. But, and Prabhupada mentioned him, well, because you're famous and popular, used for Krishna service, then you're popular and go on transcendental.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it. Prabhupada is a rascal, it's a waste of time. Because if you don't connect with Krishna, Swami Vekivalam, it's a waste of life.
Yeah, it's just, it's in the realm of the field of activities of the mind, in the words of what Jad Bharat was saying. You're just staying on the, that's manarato. You're in the mental platform. All your enjoyment, whatever, it's all on the mental platform. It's all on the mental platform. So very, very weighty instructions. So what's the answer to your question? The one that you said, well, how to deal with that? Because you want to appreciate, you know, if someone's good, they're good. If they're doing something good, why not appreciate it? But not to become enamored by it. Mm. So there's some fine thing in that. I mean, to not appreciate it, to only see the bad in everyone is also a kind of peculiar mentality that will make you go and taste what they're tasting.
That's like seeing one good eye and one bad eye.
What's keeping things in perspective, I think, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these things aren't easy. It certainly helps if the relationship amongst the devotees is good. That certainly helps. Hare Krishna. So we don't have a class on Saturday this time.
Not here.
Not here. It's a class in Urmila Mataji. When did she come?
Friday night.
She's a very good speaker. Very committed devotee. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.